have watched 24 recruiting classes come through, play 4 years, and move on. I know their families. I know their sons. I know their daughters. It's an unbelievable experience. I have such a different perspective than anybody else. Hidden talents. I used to play the accordion.
That's what I'm talking about. That's the audio gold we needed.
And I was the last one out of the car, and my sister picked the guitar, and my brother picked the trumpet. So I picked up the accordion, and I learned how to play it.
You're dialed in to the ABCA's Calls from the Clubhouse podcast, connecting our coaches with some of the best baseball minds in our game. Now here's your host, Jeremy Schiedinger.
We are broadcasting live from the ABCA National Office here in Greensboro, North Carolina, and you're dialed back into our podcast and another edition of our Dugout Chatter episodes, where we highlight one of the countless extraordinary coaches inside our association, and man, do we got a solid show for you today. But first and foremost, on behalf of the American Baseball Coaches Association, we want to thank each and every one of you for listening into the show each week. Coaches across every single level of our game, from youth into professional baseball, to parents and players, to just simply baseball enthusiasts out there, thank you. We love that you're tuning into our podcast each week, connecting with these terrific baseball men. And our hope is that you're learning more about the game. You're challenging your opinions and your mindsets, challenging your why towards coaching, all in the spirit of growth and development. So if you keep listening, we'll keep pumping these episodes out for you. Which brings us to today's show and a simple conversation with this coach in Anaheim this January at our convention motivated us to ramp up this content and get more audio gold out there for you guys. Talking to John McCormick, the head coach at Florida Atlantic University, and here's the line on Mac. A 26-year continuous ABCA member, he's in the middle of his ninth season as a skipper there at FAU, four NCAA regional appearances, over 300 wins in his head coaching career, and an avid Calls from the Clubhouse podcast listener. It's going to take less than a minute for all of you to realize why he is widely regarded as one of the true good guys in our game. Just an exceptional person. His alumni, his players love him, and he was ready for his chance to grab the mic for this interview. Now, Mac takes us through his growth as a coach, spending each of his 27 years in the Owls dugout, coming up as a GA into an assistant, associate head coach, and now head coach. And he has fantastic advice for coaches across all levels of baseball on how to approach our players, the game, learning and development. Just awesome insight Coach Mac brings us on all these fronts. Plus, he drops some fantastic insight into his musical background as a kid. He reflects on some of the funnier moments over the years with his clubs. And this was such a fun interview, guys. We could have easily turned it into a two-hour special. So again, these are about shining a light on the endless list of impressive and incredible baseball men that are proud members inside the ABCA, and we're excited to have you guys get to know Coach John McCormick from Florida Atlantic University on today's Dugout Chatter episode. Get ready, guys, because this great show is coming at you right now. The beauty of the Calls from the Clubhouse podcast, coaches, is where we get to sit down and highlight our tremendous members across the entire scope of the association. It's an even greater pleasure when you get to talk to one of the true great people inside our game. Today, we're talking with John McCormick, the head coach at Florida Atlantic. Mac, thanks for being on the call with us today.
Oh, my pleasure, Sheets. Looking forward to it. This is a dream come true.
It's awesome.
I've been listening to your podcast and do a fabulous job. So thank you for having me on.
Well, I appreciate that. Hopefully I show up today and answer the bell. I wish if we could put on the stuff we just talked about. We just spent about 15 minutes talking through some great stuff. This one's been marked on the calendar for a long time, coaches, for this reason. So those that are loyal to the show and you've been listening all last year of 2016, and we saw you out in Anaheim, and I had a lot of people coming up. Coach, I love the show, Sheets. This is great. This is great. Have you thought about this guy, that guy? And I'm taking it all in. The moment that this podcast changed, coaches, is when I ran into John McCormick at one of our divisional meetings. Sheets, I love the show. And I literally looked at Mac and I go, you listen to the show? Really? Like, you, Division I head coach, you find time? Oh, I love it. I love this. I love that. Man, you should do more of them. And I've told Mac this, and I'll tell our listeners this. That's the moment when I got back from Anaheim and I said, you know what?
We can't go every other week. We've got to go every week. We've got to get creative. We've got to highlight more guys. We've got to get more content out. So, Mike, this is the on-air, live, personal thank you for taking our calls from the Clubhouse podcast to a new level. Thank you for that.
My pleasure. You do a great job, and I know a lot of people listen, and you do a lot of good. Like, there's certain things in these podcasts where, like we talked about off air about the Augie Garrido one.
Sure.
That, you know, you get a chance to know these people and find out what they're all about. It's fantastic, man. It's fantastic.
That's awesome. Well, on that same subject, because this is awesome for us too, anytime we get a chance to highlight a guy that's a 26-year continuous member, that means a lot to us, but we know that the association means something to you. If you could, talk about the ABCA through the years and your development as a coach, your convention experiences, all that stuff that wraps up being an ABCA member.
I think the ABCA is invaluable for all coaches, young, old. You have a built-in network of people that are like-minded, you know, college baseball, baseball in general. You know, I got involved in the ABCA in the early 90s, and I was a young assistant. We had no money, and like we all did at some point, a couple of us got together, jumped in a car. We drove to Atlanta. I think we had six people in a hotel room, and I kind of stumbled around my first convention, didn't really know what to do, didn't know who to talk to other than guys I played with or played against. And what changed it for me, and I challenge all the head coaches out there at the convention to be accessible to young assistants.
Yes.
And what changed it for me was Smoke Laval and Dusty Rhodes. Mm. Invited me to, they had a little kind of baseball jam session, if you will, in their room. And Tim Tuma was there. There's a couple other guys. And it was exactly what I thought the convention should be. A bunch of guys sitting around having an adult beverage, talking baseball. And I learned so much. I think I uttered one sentence. And I just listened to those guys talk about their experiences in the SEC. And, you know, then first and third plays and double cuts and, you know, pitching sequences. I was absolutely mesmerized. And I was hooked. I was absolutely hooked. I loved it. I love the convention. I love listening to guys from everywhere talk about what they do with their teams. And now with some of the stuff you guys are doing with the online, the website and the videos, and it's a great organization to be a part of. And I encourage my coaches to be in it. And I encourage everybody to be in it. It's a great thing.
You know, I heard from an older coach on my very first conventions, because I know, young cat, you want to get in there and you want to tell everybody how much you know, but you're going to catch yourself in a situation like that, Mac, where you're around some real pros, some real experienced guys, and the best thing you can do is keep your mouth shut and just open your 100%. Ears and just take it in. That's an awesome story. Here, this is a really cool dynamic, because we were, again, talking before we started recording. You know, you're looking at your 27th year in baseball, and you've spent your entire career there at Florida Atlantic and have done an outstanding job, this being your ninth year as the head coach, of really building that program into something special, a lot of regional appearances, and obviously winning the conference championships. I'd love for you to talk through and go right into that dynamic that we were discussing about, you know, spending your career at one school, what you think you missed out on, but really what you've gained by being there.
Well, I never got into, I got into college baseball in terms of coaching kind of by accident. I played at Lynn University, which is a Division II school in Boca, and FAU is across the street or on the other side of town. And I knew the head coach there and I knew all their players. And when I got my career got done playing, I had an opportunity to go to camp with the Expos, and I was there and I didn't get signed. So I came back, and a good friend of mine from high school was playing at FAU. He's a year younger than me. And I was at his house, and he was watching his little brothers. And his little brothers played with Kevin Cooney, who was the head coach at FAU at the time, played with his kids. So Coach Cooney came over to pick up his kids, and he's like, "Hey, John, how you doing? I thought you were at the Expos." I said, "It didn't work out." He says, "What are you going to do?" I said, I'm going to go to FAU to get my MBA. And in my mind, I was getting my MBA. I was going to Wall Street to make millions of dollars.
Sure.
That's what I was going to do. I had a finance teacher at Lynn that had gone to Wall Street, made a ton of money, and retired and taught. And I said, that's what I'm going to do. So the other side of the story is Coach Cooney, his side of the story was he never thought I was going to show up because he said, hey, come and see me next week. So I showed up and he gave me a $250 baseball scholarship, which I had to pay for my classes out of. And I worked that year, 1991, with him. And then the following year in 91, he gave me some more responsibility. When I got there, there were some coaches and I fell in love with it. And then I started doing the recruiting a couple years later and I couldn't see myself doing anything else. So I didn't go to Wall Street. I didn't make millions. But then throughout the years, I just stayed at FAU and I had opportunities to leave. And for one reason or another, it wasn't the right fit. And I truly was invested in everything that was going on here. We went from Division II to Division I. We went from the Transamerica to the Atlantic Sun to the Sun Belt, now to Conference USA. And I have a totally different perspective on it. There are things that people, and I know Sheets were talking about this before, yeah. And I was talking to it about with somebody the other day about, do you think my career has been hindered or not enhanced by not going to different places? And I said, I'm sure there's things I missed out on, but I don't know what I missed out on. But the difference is the things that I have here. I have watched 24 recruiting classes come through, play 4 years and move on. And I know their families. I know their sons. I know their daughters. It's an unbelievable experience. I have such a different perspective than anybody else. The fact that we have a saying here, it's called OTF, only the family. And I came up with it years ago that only the people really in this dugout that and played in this program really know what it's about. You can kind of try to explain it to administrators and to recruits, but unless you're in it and live it every day. So at the end of each practice, before each game, you know, the guys get together and they say, OTF, only the family. And it means something to me because of the 27 years that I've been here. And some of these kids that play for, some of these young men that play for us, I knew them when they were 5 years old in our camp, you know,
right.
I've known their family forever. I played with some of their dads. So it is truly a different experience and a different atmosphere than a lot of places.
It's interesting. I don't want to, you know, open up too much, but if you could, can we pull back the curtain a little bit? Because there's one thing, you know, the success on the field, we can see that. I think what I try to do is I try to connect with other coaches that have played against you. And I've had several on the phone over the last few days. I said, man, give me a nugget about Florida Atlantic. And they said, man, you know, when you show up to the ballpark, and this is a testament to you, Mac, and they're a well-coached team. You know they're going to do everything well, and they're not going to beat themselves. You have to show up. You can't give away free bases. You can't, you know, give away some cheap runs because Florida Atlantic will beat you because they're a well-coached team. So that's obviously a feather in your hat in the way that you've approached it. But if you could, there's more to that. And again, dive in as much as you want to or feel like you can reveal. Pull back the curtain a little bit on your locker room and your culture there at FAU.
Well, I call it simple baseball. We practice simple baseball. 95% of everything that happens in a game, we need to do every day, touch on it every day. We don't get into trick plays. We don't get into, a whole bunch of that stuff. It is about swinging the bat, throwing strikes, fielding the ball and throwing it to the right base. And the culture thing, and I try to explain this to people, and for coaches out there, you have to understand the player that you can coach, that player that fits your system. The problems that that arise in the dugout are when you don't do that and you recruit guys that go outside of your system and you can't coach them or you can't control them. I always think that all the problems can be, I don't want to say solved, but can be minimized by good recruiting and not going outside of what you truly believe in. And I know it's really difficult because you want to win and you see a guy and coaches, you guys know when you sit down with a kid, you know, you see right through it. And that's, I think that's been our forte is we've been able to thankfully walk away from guys and say, hey, this is not the right place for you. If you don't believe in these things, you can't come here. Because an old pro guy told me years and years ago, he said, get the player that don't ever talk someone into coming to your place, because at some point they're going to stop and go, I didn't want to come here anyways. And they're going to stop working and they're going to stop caring. And the other thing that we do is I think we do a really good job of informing the current players of what the previous players did. Not the guys who are All-Americans, because they can see that. Not the guys who went on to play in the big leagues. I'm talking about the grinder that now is a doctor. That this guy was a really good player and he's a lawyer. That this guy is now a teacher or a coach. That he had nowhere to go and we gave him a chance and he was a great player. We educate them on all those guys, not the guys that made it, because those are so few and far between. Educate them on the guys who didn't make it. And we also do a thing in the fall where we bring alumni back and they talk to the players about their experience here. We try to do it every Friday, every other Friday. Talk about your experience here. Talk about what it meant to play here. The alumni game is really special to us, that these guys get a sense of how truly special it is to play here.
That is awesome. I'm so thankful you went into that. There's some real great takeaways from that. One that came to mind as you were talking, I had another older coach drop this on me, and it fits perfectly with your statement, is you can always go out and recruit who you want, but you're always going to end up with who you're supposed to get. And I love the fact that you guys have such a clear, distinct player that fits being in that Al program is all about.
College baseball is not easy, and you got to find guys that are really, really committed to it. Not committed to – they have to be committed to making themselves better, but they have to be committed to the program. They have to be committed to – college baseball is – Friday night at 6:30 is such a small nugget of college baseball,
sure.
You know? I tell people that all the time, recruits in my office, and I tell them, you sit down, I said, listen, if you want someone to tell you that you're getting 11 pair of shoes and you're going to Omaha every year and this and that and other thing, this is the wrong place for you. I'm going to tell you the reality of it. We get up at 6:30 and we condition. You have to go to study hall. You have to do this community service. You know, that's college baseball to me, not Friday night at 6:30. That's the easy part. That's the payoff. That's the payoff.
Sure.
The hard part is everything that goes in between it. And getting back to the coaching point of it, you know, we just ask our guys to play hard and we play simple baseball. We spend our time on the things that are going to happen in games. You know, I don't profess to be the Joe Torre of college baseball, but the one thing that we really do a nice job here is we're organized. We run a good practice. They get a lot of reps. We concentrate on the things that are going to happen in games. And then we provide a good environment for them to play hard and have success.
And this is, I love this question. This is one of my all-time favorite questions. I'm going to back it up with my second all-time favorite question. But lessons learned along the way. I love this from the standpoint of the guests that we've had on. And Mac, you know, we've talked through a bunch of them. Just the real introspective view of, man, when I was 25 starting out, I really wish I knew this, but I didn't, and I had to learn the hard way. But what I love is that if I'm a young listener, young coach, player, man, I can learn from Mac right now something that if I adopt and adapt right now, I'm going to be a better served because of it. So if you could, unpack that, some lessons you learned along the way throughout your coaching career.
Okay, young coaches, listen up. This game that we asked our kids to play is incredibly difficult. It's incredibly difficult. When you are a player, and when I played in college, when you are a player, you think the game is not difficult. You think you can master the game, right? When I started coaching, I was a ball of fire running around. Why didn't you catch that ball? Why didn't you do this? Why didn't you do that? And it took me 5 or 6 years to realize these guys are trying. They don't want to make errors. Remember, this game is incredibly difficult to play, and the worst thing we can do is question guys on why they made an error, why that they did, you know, the mental side of it, you can get on them. But the physical side of it, none of these kids are trying to make errors. None of these kids are trying. Take a step back, watch Major League Baseball, watch the guys that are making $20 million, watch them make mistakes. Our guys make the same mistakes their guys do. You just got to kind of learn. Sometimes the best thing to do is to put your arm around them and say, hey, you'll get it next time. You catch 9 out of 10 ground balls. You know, that works better than, you know, this, that, the other thing, your feet, throw it this way. Young coaches sometimes try to coach with a little bit more caring and understand this game is not that easy, man. It's really, really difficult game to play. If you sit down from a way back perspective, this is a really, really difficult game to play. And there's no hiding in baseball. You can hide in football. You can hide in lacrosse. You can hide in basketball. You can't hide in baseball. You drop that ball in right field, everybody knows you dropped that ball in right field. Not only now, but for the rest of the game. You know, football, someone misses a block. There's 180 people running around. No one knows. Lacrosse, you drop. No one knows. Everybody forgets it. And look, no one ever says in the you've sat with your buddies and watched football games. Mm-hmm. No one has ever said, geez, if Billy didn't miss that block at the 3-minute mark in the first quarter, the game would have been different. No one, you know,
right.
It doesn't happen. But in baseball, it happens.
Yes.
You know, if Billy didn't drop that ball in center field in the third inning with one out, that inning, you know.
Yep.
So be a little bit more compassionate, not on the mental side of it. If you coached them up and they made a mental mistake, that's something they can control. You know, you got to coach them through that. But on the physical side of them, give them a break every once in a while. Give them a break, coaches. Mm,
love it. Now, here's a new addition, coaches. If you listen to our Dugout Chatter episodes, I'm always trying to get creative, think a little bit differently. Certainly don't want the episode to always sound the same. But I do love the fact that we are really shining a light on just some of the great coaches that are inside our association. But here's a new addition, and I love to do this with Mac because I know he's on that same wavelength. But, Mac, how are you still challenging your why in coaching? The reason you got into it and stayed in it, how are you still challenging that? But also, how are you still learning and growing yourself and developing as a coach?
The answer I'm going to give you is a little sappy.
Okay. Love it.
And it had to deal with my illness last year.
Yes.
If you're out there and you're listening, please don't, you know, take this as I'm looking for sympathy or, you know, whatever. But last year I was diagnosed with cancer. I had neuroendocrine cancer. I had a tumor removed. I had 30 radiation treatments and 13 or 14 chemos. And it wasn't fun. And all that time, I think I missed maybe one practice. But to say that I was at practice sometimes I was there physically, but I was a ghost of myself, you know, but I thought it was important for me to be at practice. And it was actually really good therapy for me. Because sitting at home and wondering what's going to happen next is way worse than feeling like absolute garbage and hanging out in the dugout. You know what I mean?
Sure.
But anyways, this is my why that I continue to coach. It was in January of last year. I had chemo on Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. And on Friday, I got to the field about 1:00. I slept in and we were doing bullpens. It was in the skill version of our January. And after that, we have a team lift on Friday. During the week, we lift position players and we lift pitchers at different times because of throwing schedules. So on Friday, we have a team lift and we got rained out. It poured. There was a storm. We got rained out and it was like 2:00 and we don't lift till 4. And I couldn't wait to go home, but they wouldn't let me drive. So I literally couldn't get home. So I was sitting in my office and the secretary or administrative aide stopped in to talk to me. And we were talking about everything. Like she was asking me about, because her mother had just been diagnosed and what to expect. People thought that I would talk about it to anybody. I don't, you know, if I could help one person, you know, But it just so happens I looked down on my watch and it was, now it was closer to 4 o'clock. I said, well, I'm going to drag myself down to the weight room and be there for the guys, you know? So usually on Fridays after team lift, I'll usually say something, hey, you know, be smart this weekend, make good decisions, you know, that type of stuff. And for some reason, I went into something a little bit deeper, not concerning me. And Sheets, this is the why. I was talking to these guys and I could see that I was getting through to them. You know, you could see it in their eyes that, and you're not getting through to everybody. And I was even questioning, why am I still doing this as I was, you know, while I was, the sickness was going on. And I even said to my mother at one time, geez, because of this, I don't have a lot to do. I feel like I don't have a purpose, you know? And I left the weight room with an unbelievable, like, buoyancy in my heart. And I hate to be sappy. And I was driving home and I called my mom and I said, I remember what my purpose is. My purpose is to help these guys become better people, better men through baseball. And that's my why. People don't turn it off and say, oh, that's BS, you know, but it is the truth. No. It is the truth.
Oh, it's so awesome. Follow up on that in terms of challenging, I guess, your knowledge or your state or what you're teaching or how you're going about it. And, you know, we talked about the podcast. I'd love the fact you're a loyal listener of what we're doing, but what else are you doing? What books are you into? Or what are kind of the things you referenced the ABCA convention and getting up with other coaches? What are some things that, again, our listeners be interested to know how you're going about continuing to grow yourself?
Well, you talk, you know, I like to talk to people, different coaches, assistants, anybody that, hey, what do you guys do in this situation? What do you guys do there? The podcasts are a great thing. You know, what's been really nice for me is I'm on the committee with the Inside Pitch magazine for articles, and some stuff that comes across is like, this is really good stuff. You know, there's some people out there with amazing things. But I think the thing that for all coaches, especially older coaches, is to, you don't have to change the program, but I think the good thing is to continue to tweak it, to change things where people don't fall into a rut or even for yourself, you know, as I told you in the pre-podcast, I was blown away by Tyler Gilliam's stuff. And we're going to go back to doing some of that stuff next fall. You know,
awesome.
I think Tyler's like 28, 30, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. He just got started coaching and that guy is amazing. For anybody out there who hasn't listened to his podcast, please go to it. It is absolutely amazing. The stuff that he talks about, and the way that they went about implementing it, is fantastic. But I think that you have to be open to everything. I'm reading a book about Roberto Clemente right now and his life, about what he went through. And like, I'm amazed that he continued to play baseball, like the roadblocks that were put up in front of him. And I'm like, oh geez, I got it easy compared to what he went through, you know?
Right.
You know, I listened to a lot of podcasts about history, about what went on previous to, us, you know, Vanderhoek's, his podcast was awesome.
Yes.
Augie Garrido's was fantastic. You know, talk to old scouts, you know, about baseball and the changes. And, you know, I think it's more of a, I don't intentionally try to change or do that. I think it's just a curiosity and saying, hey, I could use that in my everyday life. I can implement that to become a better coach and to become a better mentor for these guys, become a better, you know, a better head coach for my assistants, a better representative of the university. You know, Jim Schlossnagel, God, I've known him for 20 years. He was a stallion on the podcast about, you know, if you look at a guy that represents TCU and represents what he believes in better than him, show it to me. You know, he's unbelievable,
right?
You know? So I kind of just take it from wherever I can get it. And, you know, I would say read books and listen to podcasts. You know, we're all on the road recruiting, and I don't want to say it's better than listening to music, but maybe you turn off talk radio and You don't have to hear about the 19th mock draft of the NFL that's going on today. And maybe listen to a podcast or, you know, something. So that would be my advice.
Awesome. Love it. It's a mentality. It's a mindset. And then it turns into a lifestyle. And that's what we're obviously working through this podcast, is really change that culture towards personal growth all the time. Now, I love this question. It kind of opened up a little bit on the low side. And I'm certainly, we're going to spin that back to become a positive. But talk through the highs and lows that you've experienced throughout your career that you still reference, you still think about, and they're so apparent to you. And from the low side, and where I'm going with this, Mac, is you dealing with your own fight with cancer, but you also had a player in your program going through it at the same time. And that was what from the outside looked like a great way that you guys turned what would be perceived as a low moment, and you really rallied through it and made it into a high moment. Could you open that up for us a little bit?
Well, we'll start with the low. I guess that would have to be the low. You know, I was diagnosed in the summer of 15, but everything was kind of put on hold because my father had passed away at the same time. And I told I told my assistants in the beginning of September that I was diagnosed. And then I told the team right before I had the tumor removed, because I was going to miss a week of individuals. And so then I kind of got into the routine of what I was doing. And at the same time, Kevin Abraham was having a problem with his arm, and we couldn't figure out what it was, MRIs, this and that. And then finally it had come back. And this is the lowest point for me, is they asked me to be there when they told him he was diagnosed with Hodgkin's disease, non-lymphoma Hodgkin's disease. So we were in the room, and it's a unique situation. It's me, the doctor, the trainer, his father, Kevin, and believe it or not, in South Florida, we couldn't find anybody to translate for his father. His father doesn't speak English. They're from Cuba. So Kevin, you know, when Kevin walked in the room, he knew something was not good. You know, he's a sharp kid. He knew something was not good. And so they started kind of telling what the diagnosis was. And Kevin's immediate reaction was, when can I play baseball again?
Of course.
And this is the low point. And the doctor, and doctors are doctors. And I don't think sometimes they understand the attachment that our guys have with the game. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. They define themselves through the game. I think we all do at some point, you know?
Sure.
So the doctor says, Kevin, we're not talking about playing baseball again. We might have to amputate your arm. That's how bad this is spreading. And I immediately said, whoa, whoa, doc, let's walk this back a minute, you know? And Kevin starts crying. His father is now kind of taking a step forward, like trying to protect his son, like, because his dad doesn't really know what's going on. Kevin is crying. He's trying to translate to his father. I'm starting to tear up. I'm telling everybody, can we just, you know, I said, doc, there's got to be, we can't start down that road right now. What else can, you know? And so Kevin composes himself. And this was the moment that I'll never forget. He composed himself. He wiped his tears, and I had my arm around him, and he goes, okay, how do we fix this? And when do I get started? And I was like, oh my God, you know? And from that point on, he was amazing. We forced him to go back to live at home while he was going through his treatments. He wanted to stay in school. And I'm like, Kevin, man, I'm telling you from experience, you're not going to be able to go through chemo and take classes and do everything that you want to do. Be at home, let your family take care of you, let your mom, you know. So he started that, and we would talk all the time. And one funny story, we were both going through chemo, and we met up for lunch, and there really wasn't, no one could eat. So we just kind of sat there drinking water, sipping water, because both of us were so nauseous, we couldn't eat. But he would come to the games, and, you know, to see him just pop in that dugout with his smile and bald head, and he'd be like, hey, this is great. So we ended up turning you know, negative into a positive. And I would reference him every once in a while to the guys. I'm like, look at him. You guys think you got it bad because you went 0 for 2 and 2 punch outs and, you know, maybe you threw a ball away. Big deal, you know?
Sure.
It means nothing in the grand scheme of things, you know? Because of the fact that one thing I preach to our guys is in 5 years, we're not going to worry about what type of baseball player you are. We're going to worry about what type, our perception is going to be what type of person you are.
Yes.
So that's the thing that we have to work on. The baseball will come easy. But anyways, and then the highs would be the day I got the job, I guess. The day I was, you know, after 17 years as a grad assistant, you know, assistant coach, laundry guy, cut the grass, you know, clean the dugouts, ordered the quit, you know, did everything.
Sure.
That was a high for, you know, not only me, but there was a lot of people invested in me, my family, you know, my wife, my kids, Coach Cooney, who we haven't really talked about, who I worked for 17 years. Everybody was kind of, the former players were invested in it. So it was kind of like, that was a high, you know, getting into that first regional as a head coach and winning the first conference championship. Those are highs, those type of things. And now the highs have become a little bit different, that Gabe Samariba, you know, got through medical school and now we call him Dr. Samariba, and those type of things are, you know, highs now. So it's been a great, great run, and I couldn't ask for anything more.
Now, this is the toughest question, because when you're talking with baseball lifers and guys that, again, like we said, we define ourselves sometimes by our attachment to the game. But let's say you didn't go into coaching. What was that dream growing up, Mac, that, hey, one day I'm going to be fill in the blank?
Well, early, like most guys, I was going to be Steve Garvey.
Right.
That's what I was going to be. And then, you know, as you get a little bit older and I got into college and I thought that I was going to be Gordon Gekko, go to Wall Street and make millions and
great,
you know,
reference
have
right
a house
there
in the Hamptons. And, you know, that's what I thought. But, you know, I'm where I'm supposed to be. You know, I'm where I'm supposed to be.
I'm going to continue to dig here. This is lead reporter. I got to dig. Hidden talents or hobbies? You know, Schloss drops on a trumpet on us, and we haven't had anything close to that since. But hidden talents or hobbies that you have that maybe not a lot of people know about?
My kids, you know, they're baseball careers, sure. I guess, high school, and my oldest son is in college playing. Hidden talents, I used to play the accordion.
There, that's what I'm talking about. That's the audio gold we needed.
I used to play the accordion. And the only reason I picked that is my mom wanted me and my sister and my brother to get into music. And I was the last one out of the car, and my sister picked the guitar, and my brother picked the trumpet. And
you got stuck.
So I picked up the accordion and I learned how to play it. And I can ride a unicycle.
See? I knew there was more in there.
Hobbies. You know, I'm not a golfer. I'm not a fisherman. You know, family type stuff, friends, that type of stuff. I like movies, books, podcasts, you know, that type of stuff. I know Coach Archuleta, he loves golf.
Yeah.
It's just hard for me to spend 5 hours out there chasing around a white ball.
Right.
It's really difficult.
Especially where I hit the golf ball. You got to go chasing it.
Yes. Yeah. I used to play a lot. I used to, growing up in South Florida, especially Boca, there's 26 golf courses in the city limits of Boca.
Wow.
And I used to play a lot. I worked at a golf course. I used to play a lot. And then when me and my wife had kids, I felt guilty spending that much time away, you know, because you go hit at the range, you play, it's 4 hours. And then of course, after, there is some adult beverages and some lies being told, about how good you really are. Not
sure.
So I always felt bad that she was with the kids for, you know, on her own for 6 hours and then slowly kind of lost my interest in it. I live a mile and a half from school, and
yep.
I come here in the morning and, you know, even on days off to do whatever. And, you know, this is my kids, you know, it's kind of an odd, my kids grew up here. They, run around in every building and been thrown out of every facility we have for being
kids
riding their heelys on the basketball court, which that didn't go over well.
I can imagine,
you know, stuff like that. So it's you know, my hobby is FAU baseball. Yes. My life is that. My hobby is that. You know,
that's great. You know, if we could, because you're again a fan of the show, I know you follow us on Twitter. If we could get a picture of you playing the accordion, and you're okay with
God.
And you sign off on it, one of your quote images will be that picture, and we'll pull the best quote from that segment.
I will have to find a picture of it.
Perfect.
I will have to find.
I need a compromising picture. That would be awesome.
Yeah. I'm actually going to go to my mother's house tonight, so I will
Love
dig
it.
Around.
Love it.
I will dig around and look for it.
We'll follow through on
that. Okay. I will keep you updated.
Perfect. That would be so awesome. This is always a great one as well. Talking about the funniest stories from over the years. Are there some that jump off the page to you, moments or stories within your team and your program that you would share with us today?
I think that a lot of the funny stuff, I love going on road trips. I love it. I know, you know, there's nothing greater than showing up at a city or another place. And of course some fans come and some parents, but it's, you know, our 27 guys against everybody, against, like, we just got back from San Antonio, and my mentality is it's us 27 plus coaches and staff against the whole city of San Antonio, all 4 million of them,
sure.
5 million of them.
Yeah.
And I love it because, you know, you get to eat, you know, we do all our meals together as team meals. We do team meals, all the time, you know, because of something that happened 20 years ago. Ron Rippo, if you're listening, we call it the Ron Rippo rule. So we eat all our meals as a team, you know, and it's a little bit extra work. And sometimes on Saturday after a loss, you're kind of like, oh God, you know, I would just want to stay in the hotel room, but you know, hey, everybody's got to get dressed, you know, college shirt, and let's go eat, spend some time together, you know? But I love being on the road, and all the funny stories, come from it. And we still talk about it. It was in the early 2000s. And we actually had a t-shirt made of all the kind of miscues in this one season. You know, we had to drive a bus to Troy, and it got a flat tire in a rest stop outside of Tallahassee. And the next, you know, and kids are very resilient, and you know, there's no place to get food. And we're just like, hey, hang in there, man. They're bringing another bus. So a two ball game breaks out in a rest stop on I-10, you know,
of course it did.
You know, just stuff like that. And, you know, missing planes and, those type of things. One of them comes to mind. We were in, Buies Creek, North Carolina.
Sure.
This is a little strange thing. And at the time, Coach Cooney, Kevin Cooney, was our head coach, and he was an adventurous eater. Like, you know, so he says at this hotel we're staying, you know, the lady goes, well, there's a buffet down there. It might be good for the guys. Cause they could eat a lot of food. And she hands us like a little brochure on it, and it's fried catfish and collard greens and, you know, all deep, deep Southern food. And I said to my boss at the time, I said, hey, coach, man, we got a bunch of guys from South Florida. This ain't gonna, you know, he's like, it'll be fine. They'll love it. You know, fried okra. No one even knows what okra is,
exactly.
You know?
Yeah.
So we play the game. And we're going to go there right from in uniform to eat. And we show up there, and the place is absolutely packed. It's an old, like, Winn-Dixie that they've literally turned into like a buffet restaurant, and it's just tables and chairs and just roll out type buffet type stuff. And now you have to picture this. It's in outside Buies Creek. So all these people are walking in and waiting outside the restaurant. And I'm like, oh my God. And we're getting off our bus, and we're in uniform, and we're waiting in line, and this whole restaurant is filled with a Civil War reenactment. So you have the Union Army on one side, you have the Southern Army on the other side in uniform, and then you have us eating in uniform.
Outstanding.
Needless to say, we still talk about that, and the guys didn't like the food. You know,
too
they
Southern.
Came to me, you know. They always come to the system. Hey, can you order us pizza when we get back to the hotel? This is, you know.
Yeah.
I said, we'll work something out. We'll work something out. but it was like walking into like the Twilight Zone. Like, you know, because South Florida is nowhere, nothing like any of the deep South. You know, mm-hmm. we're further south, but so in those smaller towns, the Troys and the Bowie Creeks, and mm-hmm. you know, you see some odd things that we're not used to seeing. But that's all part of it.
You get cultured. That's the best.
Yes.
For yes. sure.
100%. 100%.
Okay. You've mentioned this guy a couple of times, Coach Cooney, the guy you worked for there at Florida Atlantic. And I'm sure he's going to show up on this question. But if you could, Mac, talk through your personal Mount Rushmore, the three or four people that truly impacted you the most in this game.
Well, first and foremost, you know, I think my father gave me the love of baseball, you know, and it's one of those truisms that whatever was going on in our family dynamic, we always had baseball as kind of a common, you know, thread. He loved the game. You know, my grandmother, his mother, absolutely loved baseball. She was from Ireland, never experienced it until she moved here. Absolutely loved the game. I think my father instilled in me to work at it. Don't give up. Keep working at it. And then the next guy would have to be Kevin Cooney. Without him, I would be nowhere. You know, I've heard this question asked to a lot of your guests, and mine is, again, a little bit unique because I've only worked for one person.
Sure.
I've only worked for one person. So Kevin Cooney would have to be on there for, you know, I learned so many things from him. But the greatest thing that he allowed me to do, and I would, you know, we were just a Division II and then just turning Division I. And, you know, you go out recruiting, you'd hear about all these, you talk to other assistants. And, you know, I always said baseball coaches are kind of like a gaggle of old women. You know, we sit there and we trade stories and we complain and we, sure. you know, but you learn a lot about people in that setting. And the one greatest thing he allowed me to do is he allowed me to constantly fail. He did not ever tell me no. He constantly allowed me to fail. He constantly allowed me to keep pushing the boundaries. And I was so fortunate because it was me and him. We didn't have another assistant. So I did catching. I did pitching. I did outfield. I did hitting. I did scheduling. I did recruiting. I did budget. I did everything, you know? So, I, you know, now sometimes I feel bad for these young assistants because these staffs have grown so big that some of these guys, you talk to them that if it's not pitching, they don't even know what day it is. Mm-hmm. You know, they don't know scheduling. They don't know. They do some recruiting, but they don't know scholarships. They don't know budgets. They don't know, you know, and I would sit in with guys after recruiting and I would hear them talk about this, that, and other thing. And I'm like, man, I'm so fortunate, man. I can do whatever I want. You know, because it was me and him, you know, and you know how it was back then that, you know, we took care of the field. We did the mound. We, you know, we had one grounds guy. We helped him out, ordered their equipment, did the uniforms. By not moving to another place or another opportunities, I was able to fail at an alarming rate, but it made me better. And I say that kind of tongue in cheek, but, right. you know, I would come, you know, it's funny though. He used to always kind of make fun of me a little bit. And cause every January I would do something different in practice and he'd go, let me guess, ABCA, right? The convention, you learned
sure.
this at the convention.
I knew that's
and
where
you're
that was
implement
going.
It.
Yeah.
And, I would say, yeah, you know, and then, you know, I think the great thing about the convention is you can go and you take, you know, I remember Jack Leggett did a thing about infield play and, you know, we couldn't implement all of it, but we implemented some of it. You know, I was able to, with the facilities we have and the people we have, we were able to implement some of it. We couldn't implement all of it. And, you know, some of the stuff we use till right now, you know? So Coach Cuny would be on there. Another guy that would be on there that was probably more helpful to me than he knows, and I don't know if I ever have a chance to tell him, was Joe Walsh, who passed away abruptly or suddenly a couple of years ago. He was at Harvard. We spent a lot of time together on the road. We played him every year. He was, of course, a little bit older than me. And I don't know if I ever told him how much he meant to me. And, you know, it was really, you know, to sit there and listen to his path in college baseball. And I would ask him questions for as a different perspective. And he was always so gracious with his time. And I considered him a really close friend. And, you know, I was sad for his family and his daughters on his passing. But I would have to put him up there. You know, maybe there's a guy here in town named Jim Lytle. Jim Lytle was played in the big leagues with the Yankees. He was my Legion coach. And then it just so happens that we worked together here at FAU. And I learned a lot of baseball from him. He was, you know, a lot of learning how to deal with the players. And he gave me a piece of advice is, and I tell people this in the recruiting process, if you come and you think you're going to get coached the first day, you're wrong. Because before I coach you, I want to see you on a good day. I want to see you on a bad day. And I want to see you for a little while before we start implementing changes. I think that's one of the things that especially young guys do is they try to coach as soon as the bell rings. No, let the players tell you what needs to be done. Let them tell you, because every player needs to be treated fairly, but doesn't need to be treated the same when it comes to coaching. Some guys might need a little bit more, some guys might need a little bit less. So those are the four people probably, as I think back, that have been really, really instrumental in my life.
This is another question that's come about, and a great opportunity to really dive a little bit deeper, but the coaches and teams you've really enjoyed competing against, just some of those great relationships you have on field and dugouts with teams or specific coaches. Could you open that up a little bit?
Yeah, I love competing against everybody. The greatest part of my day is when the game starts, being in that dugout with our guys, with my assistants, and, you know, chess match in the game against the opponent. I really like going down to Miami and playing against Jim. Jim Morris.
Sure.
I thought for years when they were, you know, they won national championships in 99 and then again in 2001. And I thought that at that point, Jim, more so than any college coach I've been around, could translate his approach to coaching into big league baseball. The way he did his bullpen, because I don't know if people know, Jim was kind of ahead of the curve with, especially in college, with the left rights and that type of stuff. He was way ahead of the curve, you know, with that. And I thought he managed a fabulous game. So I always like playing him because I kind of learned some stuff, you know, watching and kind of now I've gotten to the relationship where I can ask him like, why'd you do that? Or what would you do here? And he's gracious with that. You know, anybody in the state of Florida, Kevin O'Sullivan, up in Florida, we played Legion against each other when we were 16 or 17 years old. He worked at FAU for a couple of years. He, believe it or not, he was our GA.
Wow. Did not know that.
He was our GA. Yeah. Back in the early 90s. And we've known each other for years. So I enjoy that. Plus his two assistants are old friends of mine. They're both Palm Beach County guys, mm-hmm. Brad Weitzel and Craig Bell. So I enjoy that. Dave Tillett over Florida Gulf Coast. We played them last night. He's an old friend. Now in the conference, I love our conference, Conference USA. There's some great baseball people. And sometimes I don't think we get the credit we deserve. There's some great baseball people in it and it's getting better all the time. You know, I love Wayne Graham is Wayne Graham. But for me, I don't want to offend anybody, but I think Scott Barry at Southern Miss is an absolute stud.
Yes.
What he does with that team, what he's done with that program. If you go there, It's a gem of college baseball that I don't think enough people know about. They're in a tough state with, you know, that juggernaut of Mississippi State and Ole Miss. It's tough to get to, but it's worth it for a weekend series. The other place that I loved going to was Louisiana Lafayette. The fan support and the uniqueness of what they do there is the thing I loved about it most. And by the quirk of the schedule, we were in the Sun Belt. I think we played them 8 times and 7 of them were in Lafayette, plus 2 conference tournaments. Wow. By the way, the schedule kept changing. And I didn't mind it. I loved it. We got to know, they have a cooking club there. We got to know them really well. Gus, if you're listening, hello. I haven't seen you in a couple of years. It was fantastic. And Tony Robichaux is a master. When we would go to the conference meetings, I would make sure, at like a little kid, to make sure that I got to sit next to him at dinner, because to talk about how he promotes the program and the players and his pitching philosophy, and you know, it's great. It's fantastic. So those are some of the guys. Now Greg Lovelady, an old friend, is at UCF. It was great to see him and what he's doing up there. And I enjoy it. I'm a people person, so I enjoy it. And I don't ever, when the game's over, the game is over. I don't, you beat us. Fantastic. Congratulations. That means we have to go home and get better. I don't ever, you know, some people, they're friendly to you before the game, and then they, you know, you beat them and they, you know, they don't want to shake your hand.
Turn
or they,
quickly.
You know, and it's like, come on, man. It's life is too short for that stuff, you know? And now I can pick and choose who we play. So this game is tough enough, and what we do to deal with young people all the time is tough enough. So I don't want to have to deal with someone in another dugout that's, you know, that's making this a miserable weekend or a miserable Tuesday night. I'm not into that, you know?
Absolutely. Well, Mike, you have been so giving with your time. Again, this was one that you and I staring at each other in January. I'm like, we're going to make this happen. And you've really helped grow this podcast and really challenged me personally. So challenge my why, challenge me personally to do more, present more, get more guys on. So on a lot of fronts, man, I appreciate it. Thank you. But we're more excited that you're healthy and that everything's going great. You guys are having a great season. Absolutely. And we're so proud that you're part of our membership. You epitomize the gentleman spirit in our game, but you're also just a great person. We're just so thankful.
And then we got you on the show. I appreciate that. And you guys do, you know, you guys do a great job. And the Kylitzes have been great to college baseball.
Yes.
And I, you know, I'm not, and the stuff that I referenced to the ABCA, I go on the website and I follow the podcast, and it's invaluable for, I don't even know what the membership is, $45. I mean, you talked about the return on investment, the ROI from my old Wall Street days. It's a great return on investment.
Okay, Mac. So we're wrapping this thing up, but I know you've still got some more nuggets you want to drop. If you could, what more advice or lessons do you have for our listeners that are paying attention to what's going on here on the show?
Well, for current head coaches, again, I would encourage you and you know, at the ABCA or at your local town, be accessible to people. I know it's tough, man. We all have things to do. It's not easy, but be accessible. You can help change a young assistant or a young kid's trajectory in baseball by being accessible. And I'm talking 5-10 minutes of, you know, whatever, but for the young assistants who want to continue in baseball, in college baseball, if you're going to do this, my challenge to you is to do it, get involved and do it. You know, I don't want to be rude, but a lot of young assistants, it seems they get in the game and they want to know, when do I get my car? When do I get my cell phone? You know, that type of stuff. When do I get my, you know, free shoes and that type of stuff. All that stuff will come when eventually. Don't worry about that. If you're going to do it, do it. And realize that every day that you are coaching, recruiting, or doing anything is a job interview. This business, and Sheets, you referenced it earlier, you think it's big, but it's really small. It's a really, really small thing. It's a really small community.
Yes.
It's harder to be a Division I head coach than it is to get elected to Congress. There's more congressmen than there are Division I head coaches. Mm-hmm. And every time, you never know who knows who. Every time, you know, when you have a job opening, you get on the phone to your buddies. Hey, who do you got? Give me a name. Or you say, hey, this has come across my desk. What do you got? And I keep notes. I keep a log of assistance. If anybody leaves, just to, you know, this might be a guy to look into. You know, I watch the other assistants when we're playing somebody. I watch the other assistants, you know, go about their business, how they interact with the players, how they're dressed, how they present themselves. When you're out recruiting, it's the same thing. You know, you guys think, you know, sometimes those are, everybody gets behind home plate and they start kind of talking and gabbing. And, you know, I just kind of sit off to the side, listen and make mental notes. And, you know, plus I always encourage our guys, when you're out there, you're representing our program. So be clean shaven, be dressed, be, you know, act polite, correctly, treat the coaches right, treat the parents right. And that goes a long way. And then the same thing is when you get an opportunity, you know, if you're a young assistant, you get a chance to go work, we'll say Dan McDonald's camp at Louisville, show up there ready to go, man, be ready to go, be ready to coach. Don't show up 5 minutes before and be on your cell phone and, you know, that type of stuff. No, get involved, show, you know, Dan might not have an opening, but someone might call Dan and say, hey, we had this guy that worked our camp from, you know, I don't know him really well, but he was amazing. You should check into him. That's how things happen. People don't know that, but that's how things happen behind the scenes. And you know, if Dan called me and recommended somebody, I would be on the phone with that guy in a heartbeat. I've known Dan for years and, you know, he knows what we're all looking for. And I'd be on the phone with that guy in a heartbeat, to give him a chance, you know? And that's, we were talking about Mams, my assistant. I was looking for someone I'd been guilty of for years, just hiring people that had played here, that I knew that I recruited, you know, cause I wanted to give those guys a chance because of, you know, that's what we do here. But when my last assistant left, I wanted to go outside the box and Brian Cleary brought up Greg Mamula and, you know, Mams, and it's been great, you know, and he's brought different ideas and he's brought a different energy to it. And, you know, it's really fantastic. But for assistants, if you're going to do it right, man. And the payoff will come. It will come. Mm-hmm. It's not going to come right away, but it will come. So hang in there.
I mean, you've been stewing on this since January, cause this is what we talked about at the show, but man, yeah. When you have your chance to jump on the podcast, Mac, you have dropped absolute dimes. Man, I cannot thank you enough time. This has been fantastic. Number one, just getting a chance to chat, but really opening up some of these great topics for our listeners, and could not have picked a better guest. So, Coach Mac, we really appreciate it. We wish you the best of luck, especially with the Owls the rest of the season, and we look forward to seeing you again real soon.
You got it. Appreciate it, Sheets.
It's beyond easy to see why so many in this game love and appreciate this man. The skipper down at Florida Atlantic University, John McCormick. Truly compelling stories inside this one as Mac takes us through his battle with cancer, rediscovering his personal why for coaching, the behind the scenes for himself, but also guiding one of his players through the same struggle. Just powerful stuff from Coach Mac on this one. Also, I know you didn't miss his closing remarks for young coaches out there being aware on the recruiting trails, working camps, just trusting the process of their growth in this game. Such a giver, and we're beyond thankful we could catch up with Mac for this episode. Again, Coach, we're thankful that you're healthy. We appreciate your loyalty to the ABCA over the years. We value your commitment to the game, and we wish nothing but the best to the Owls for the remainder of this season. So thanks, Mac. Just want to keep reminding you guys, these are for you. This podcast connects you with some of the very best coaches in our game, all for personal growth. And what a fantastic opportunity to pop in the earbuds for an hour or just plug this into your car and connect with these great baseball men, with every guest giving us so much insight, being transparent with all of us, offering their story and message so we can all learn from it, grow ourselves, and flat be better. Powerful stuff, and we don't want you to miss out on anything we release. So here's the rundown. Number one, head over to iTunes or Google Play and subscribe to our show on your iPhone or your Android device. An absolute no-brainer. It shows up every Tuesday. We put a new show out. It'll be right there waiting for you when you're ready to listen. Number two, you can stay plugged into our website, abca.org,
If you click on the resources tab at the top, Calls from the Clubhouse podcast link's going to be right there waiting for you. You can see all the guests and content we put out. Click on the show you want to listen to. Or number three, just give us a follow on Twitter at ABCA1945. We always announce the release of our show. Plus, we're going to pull some of the best quotes from that show, put them out with images throughout the week, links so you can hear it, so you can retweet and like it and spread the word about our podcast. And while we're on the topic of Twitter, there was a strong presence from our coaching body on last night's hashtag ABCA chat as we talked through stealing bases. So if you're wondering and you're new to this, what is ABCA chat? Here's how it works. We pose questions to the group. Our coaches provide their answers and their insight. It's an hour-long discussion around a coaching topic packed with engagement and great conversations, coaches sharing their opinions and knowledge while at the same time challenging what they're doing with their teams. It's a platform for any and everyone to check in, to learn, and grow. So make plans to join us for our next hashtag ABCA chat on Monday, May 15th, 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. We look forward to seeing you guys check in with us. Again, make sure you're following us on Twitter at ABCA1945. You can also find me on there as well at CoachSheets3, or you can reach me directly by email Sheets, S-H-E-E-T-S, at abca.org. Love the messages, the emails, and I have to read a piece of this one from a loyal member, Scott Patterson, out in California. It's a local Little League coach who heard about the show from his shoulder surgeon who listens to the podcast. You just never know where you're going to be and how you're going to run across our show. So here's a quick glimpse of the email that we got from Scott. I've listened to every episode no less than 3 or 4 times. Thank you. You and the folks at ABCA have made coaching incredible for me. You're a source for reliable information, technique, and approach that I can trust. I cannot thank you enough. To all your guests, thank you so much for sharing. The small-time youth coaches may or may not be your target audience, but we are so incredibly grateful for you and your insight. Guys, that is why we put this stuff out there. For guys like Scott and every single coach, parent, and player that wants to improve themselves in this game, dedicated to learning, developing themselves to help them accomplish their goals in baseball. Scott, we appreciate the note. Thanks for reaching out to us. It means the world to hear your kind words. And again, guys, send us those messages, send us those emails. We'll try to get them on the air. We really appreciate you guys listening in. And just in case you didn't know, for only $45, we can get you inside the world's largest baseball coaching fraternity, the American Baseball Coaches Association. If you're looking for more info, head over to our website, abca.org, and we hope to see you jump on board with us. So as always, coaches, thank you for listening in, staying dialed into our Calls from the Clubhouse podcast. And until next week, keep growing, keep developing. We wish you and your club the very best, and thank you for what you're doing for the game of baseball. We'll be right back.